Creating Change with Doug Foresta, a show dedicated to creativity and emotional healing. Creating Change on Empower Radio.
EmpowerRadio.com.
Here's your host, Doug Foresta.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Creating Change. This is Doug Foresta, and today it's going to be me speaking, and I'm going to talk about something that has come up recently with, you know, I still see clients, patients for therapy. And one of the things that's come up quite a bit recently is about, if I want to get help, how do I find the right person to help me? And then the deeper question, the real topic of this is about how do you get support for making the changes? How to find the support you need to make the changes that you want to make in your life. Now, let's say that, let me give you some examples, right? I mean, these are some of the types of changes that people I work with are looking to make in their lives. And it can be things like, for example, I want to have a better relationship. I want to have a better marriage. I want to stop smoking. I want to be healthier. I want to be less depressed. I want to be less anxious. I want to get over some trauma that happened. And one of the things that I want to share today, I think some of the things I'm going to say might be a little bit, they might go against some of the things that you might hear, but I want to talk about how, in my opinion, change actually happens, especially when you're going to see someone. You know, let's say you're thinking, all right, I want to reach out to a coach, or I want to reach out to a therapist, or I want to reach out to whatever type, you know, some helping professional or support group. How does change, you know, what do we need in terms of support in order to change? And I don't think it's quite what we think it is. So first, what I'll start with is, some of you may have heard of cognitive behavioral therapy. And cognitive behavioral therapy is a form of therapy that has probably for the last 10 or 15 years has been touted as this amazing breakthrough therapy that is scientifically proven to combat depression, and it's the most effective form of therapy. In its application, most of the time it looks like you would go to a therapist and they would give you some type of homework, and they would say, challenge your thoughts or do some type of, you know, so for example, if you're depressed, you know, what are you thinking when you're depressed? Challenge your thoughts about your thinking. And so if you have thoughts about, oh man, I'm a loser, you want to be more socially, let's say you want to be more socially active. But when you, every time you go out, someone looks at you the wrong way and you say, oh man, I'm such a loser, no one will ever like me. A cognitive behavioral therapist might help you to write out your thoughts and challenge them. And what I'll say is this, I mean, I don't think there's no form of coaching or therapy or support that doesn't use some level of cognitive behavioral therapy, in the sense that, you know, I know when I do work with people, I ask them to think about their thoughts and their feelings and their actions. So really, I have no problem with the idea of helping people with changing their thoughts, their feelings, and their actions. The real question is, what is the actual, you know, how does change happen in a therapy setting, or how does change happen in a coaching setting? And what I would say is that, and I think that there's more research to bear this out now, that the most important part of that is the relationship, that we change in relationship. It's not about the idea that somehow we're going to find the right book or the right worksheet or the right, I don't know, whatever it is, right? The right technique, that's what's going to change. I would really argue that that's not enough. That we really need, what we need is, we need relationships that support change. And that goes against, for example, that does go against most of what, I mean, I've had some wonderful people on this show who write self-help books, for example. And by the way, Barnes & Noble now has replaced their self-help section with Live Your Best Life. So I think there's been some recognition that we don't really help ourselves, or only help ourselves. So this is what I would say. There's a wonderful book by Thomas Lewis called A General Theory of Love. And in that book, what he argues or what he says is he talks about something called mirror neurons. And mirror neurons are something that were only recently discovered. And it's the idea that if you and I are looking at each other and I wave my hand, I wiggle my hand, the neurons in your brain light up as if you are doing the same thing. And what mirror neurons do is they allow for empathy. They allow the capacity for empathy. And any creatures that have mirror neurons have this capacity, this deep capacity for empathy. And we see this, for example, from the time we're born. If you have a bunch of newborn babies in a nursery together and one of the babies starts to cry, the other babies will cry because it's called empathic distress. And empathic distress means that the babies start to feel the pain of the other baby that's crying, and soon they'll all be crying. Well, you know, we certainly experience that. Like if you're around someone who is depressed, right? If you have a loved one who's depressed and you stay around that person for a while, you will start to feel depressed. Like you may pick up their energy. Like we talk about people having energy. That's a lot of what energy is that mirror neurons. It's also, by the way, explains yawning. If you ever wondered why yawns are contagious. So if you've ever, I'm sure you've had this experience and you're somewhere and you're all of a sudden somebody yawns and you can't help yourself. That's mirror neurons at work. And so here's the thing that I think is so important. And this is what I wanted to explore with you today is about that. I think a lot of times when we think about change and how we want to make changes in our life, we think, if only I had the right instructions, if only I had the right ingredients, this book, I'm going to read this book, and at the end of this book, I'm going to know everything I need to know about change, and I'm going to be able to implement change in my life. And I don't think that's enough. I don't think that's enough. It may be that if you already have the support and the motivation and you read a book, I certainly believe that books help people. And I believe that books are very useful. And of course, like I said, we've had some wonderful guests on the show and will continue to do so who've written books that are really important. But I think a book alone is not enough. And what books do, I think what books can do is it inspires people to take action, and still they need to have that support for those actions. I was talking to a client recently, and we were talking about this idea that one of the things that I don't like about, for example, people will have panic attacks and they'll come see me for panic attacks and they will say, I went to the doctor and they gave me some medication and they told me I could take this medication. And then, they sent me to you. One of the things that I really have a problem with is that unknowingly, I think that the systems of care that we have to help you, right, to help all of us, reinforce a false notion. And that false notion is that if you are anxious, if you are depressed, there is something wrong with you that needs to be fixed by an expert. And that expert knows how to fix you. And that is a narrative that I really, that's what I was excited about doing this episode, because that is a narrative that I want to challenge for you today. What I find is, so for any of you that actually suffer from panic attacks, I'm going to give you a very simple, but powerful way to deal with them. So what ends up usually happening is people come see me and they go, I have to get rid of these panic attacks. I went to the doctor, they gave me some medication, but I'm still having panic attacks. Please help me get rid of the panic attacks. And underneath that is this notion again that there's something wrong with them. I have the answer because I'm the expert, right? And then I'm going to give them something, whatever it is. I'm going to treat them. I'm going to do something to them, and then they won't have this bad thing happen. And what I found that the most effective way to overcome panic attacks, for example, is to change your relationship with a panic attack and to simply make it less interesting. So what I do is, what I work with the person on is helping them explore, at first understand that a panic attack is not going to kill you. Even if you think you're going to die, you're not actually going to die. No one's ever died from a panic attack in their lives. And then to say, you know what? It's okay to have panic attacks. They're not bad. They might be annoying, but they're not bad, and I'm not broken. And if I have a panic attack, I will just let it go. It can't last more than a few minutes unless I add more to it, and then it will be gone. And I can be, so in a way, it's actually the opposite. Instead of trying to get rid of it, you embrace and accept that that's what's there. And ironically, what happens is the more that you embrace, okay, I'm having a panic attack, it'll be gone. I'm not going to beat myself up over it. It's not a terrible thing. The less panic attacks people usually have. And in my experience, I find a lot of my clients have just, they get off medication very quickly because they realize, you know what? This isn't really that big a deal. And I'm not broken and it's okay. And I can live with it. I can make peace with it. And I think though, until that point, so many times what happens is it gets reinforced. It gets reinforced for us that we have this bad thing that we need to fix. And I think that goes back to even when we're little, you know, you're sick, you go to the doctor, right? And if you don't feel well, you go to a therapist, you go to a coach. And that's not to me, I think there's something really off about that. And so what I would say is that, you know, I'm really interested in shifting the narrative about if I'm not doing something to someone, right? If I'm not doing something to someone, then how does this work, right? Like people say, well, why am I going to pay you if you're not, you know, if you're not going to give me advice, if you're not going to tell me what to do? And it's not that I don't give advice. I certainly do give advice, but that I don't think is the primary thing. It's to me, it's really about, this is going back to Thomas Lewis, that what we actually need is the experience of being in a relationship and support. In the book, An Acrobat of the Heart, it's a book about acting, but in the afterword to the book, Andre Gregory, who is, if you've ever watched the movie My Dinner with Andre, he is the Andre from My Dinner with Andre. He says that learning to be ourselves, learning to be authentically ourselves is like learning to walk. He said it requires, yes, it requires patience, it requires skill, but it also requires the support and delight of the people around us. Imagine trying to learn to walk. Imagine a child learning to try to walk, right? And every time they fall down, you know, either if you have a child or you have a grandchild, you know, think about how you see a little child first learning to walk. I remember when my son first started to walk, right? And you're just, you get up, you fall over, you get up, you fall over. And imagine if you then said to that child, you know, what's wrong with you? You can't, you know, are you drunk? You can't walk properly. You know, what kind of loser are you? There's something wrong with you. We're gonna fix it, but there's something really wrong with you. You call that walking? You know, it looked like, you know, was it new legs? So how would that child feel, right? We'd never learn to walk, or it would be a slow, painful process because you now would feel like, wow, there's something wrong with me because I'm falling down over and over again. But what happens instead? What happens instead is, right, if most parents, thankfully, they go, oh my gosh, I'm so proud of you. Great job, right? And by the way, the child might not even really understand what you're saying at this point, but they get that you're smiling and your tone of voice. Great job, you're doing it. And even though they fall down, you're so delighted that they're learning to walk. To me, I believe that that's what change is like. When we go and we want to do new things, you know, when I think about any changes that I've ever made in my life, and I think about how, you know, think for yourself. I mean, you ever try to go on a diet, or you ever do something you want to do, or ask somebody out, or, you know, try a new hobby, you know, say, okay, I'm going to, for me, it was speaking. You know, when I went to go speak, I was so nervous, and I did a lot of really, you know, awful speaking engagements. I'll tell you a funny story in a moment, but you know, if I didn't have that support of the people around me who said, you know, you did this well, you did this well, here's where you can improve, but great job. I think that's the missing ingredient that we really need. And it's the thing that we devalue the most is the individual, is the relationship and that support. But if you think about that child learning to walk, you know, Andre Gregory says, there's nothing that an actor can do that doesn't interest me. And I feel like it's the same way for me. You know, when I work with a client, there's nothing that a client does that isn't interesting to me, that isn't, you know, being able, having somebody to be able to point out to you, even though you're struggling, even though you're falling, but look, here's the places where you actually walked, you know, you took a couple of steps. It's hard for us to do that on our own. I don't believe that we can do that. We can create massive changes in our life on our own. And yes, it is useful to have cognitive behavioral theories, and it's useful to have techniques. At the same time, without that support, right? Without finding someone who you feel really is in your corner, it's much harder. It's much harder to do that. I'll share with you a quick story, a quick funny story. I've done in the last couple of years, I've done hundreds and hundreds of presentations, probably over 300 presentations all over the world. And I did a presentation actually right in my backyard, not literally my backyard, but at a hotel nearby and where I live in Massachusetts. And it was this grand ballroom. It was a couple hundred people. And they put me in right after dinner. And they told me that for some reason I could not address the crowd directly, that no matter what they said or did, I was not allowed to talk to them directly. Still don't understand why that was, but that was the rule they gave me. Well, anyway, of course, by this point, they had been serving, what they didn't tell me is they were serving alcohol all night. And so by the dinner time, people were, you know, feeling pretty good. And, you know, it was really hard to compete with dessert. And I got up there and I had this presentation. I don't even remember what the presentation was about. But I just remember nobody was listening and they were talking over me. And I wanted to say, like, you know, shut up. Can you please stop talking? Because I'm talking. But I remember they said, you know, no matter what, you can't address the crowd. So don't address the crowd, Doug. So I just kept going. And it truly was the worst speech I've ever given. And I remember afterwards, I was done and somebody said to me as I was leaving, I felt so dejected. And somebody walked up to me and said, you know, I really give you credit, you know. I saw that it was really hard. They didn't treat you well, but you hung in there and you finished it. A lot of people wouldn't have been able to do that. And it was just the thing I needed to hear. And it was just this warm, friendly face. And I remember driving home and I thought, that's probably one of the worst experiences I'm ever going to have. And my fear was like, what if, you know, my fear is always like, what if you bomb? And I bombed and they still gave me a check. And they never asked me back, but they gave me a check and they sent me, you know, and I went home and I thought, you know, I just thought of that person. It was just that little touch, you know, their smiling face and the person saying, you know, you hung in there, you did okay. And it just, I had this immense feeling of freedom when I got home because I realized I had done it. I had faced my biggest fear and it was probably going to be all uphill from there. But I don't know that I would have been able to do that myself. I don't know that I would have been able to tell myself that or to really feel that if somebody hadn't come over to me. And so what I encourage you to do is a lot of times people ask me, what should I look for if I'm looking for a therapist or I'm looking for a coach and I want to make changes? Should I look for somebody who is a subject matter expert? Should I look for somebody who is, you know, what is it that I should look for? And what I would tell you is look for someone who delights in your walking more than they criticize your falling. Because it's in that support, I really believe that that's where we change. That the genius of somebody, a great coach and a great therapist, is someone who can see through, you know, oh my gosh, I failed 5 times this week. Yes, but you also succeeded 3 times. How did you do that? And there's something about human beings. Mark Twain, I think, said, I can survive for years on one compliment. We don't get a lot in our, if you think about in our everyday lives, right? How often do you really get praise for, how often do people really see you and say, boy, you're doing good? You know, it's really sad that for most of us, most of the time, you know, organizations and our bosses they're quick to point out what we're doing wrong, but not necessarily so quick to point out what we're doing right. And so that's the thing that I guess that for me is, if I had to say, like, what is the most contentious thing about what I'm saying is that I really don't believe that there is a method or a system that is the be all for the process of change, and that we put too much effort in that, and that there really isn't a book, or there isn't anything that you're going to read that is going to make that change in itself. Now, a book can inspire you to make changes, but you're still going to need, and it can give you information, but you're still going to need that support. And you have to find someone who delights in your progress, and somebody that you feel comfortable with. And it's really in relationship that we change. This shouldn't be such a radical notion, the idea that we change in relationship, but for some reason it seems to be, and that there's such a reinforcement in our system of the idea of even therapy treatment as a medical model. And, you know, I was talking to a patient recently, and he was talking about going to an office building, a doctor's building, and there was a radiologist and a surgeon and then a therapist. And that, to me, it sends a message that there's something wrong with you. This is a medical treatment that you're going to get. And I just don't think that that's the way that it works. So I want to really change. I want to really help you to change the narrative, to think about when you think about change, think about who's going to support me, not just what am I going to do, but who are the people in my life that can really support me? Who are the people that believe in me, and who are the people that can guide me through this process? And I would encourage you to think about any change that you've made in your life. I guarantee you that behind that change, there was someone that supported you. It's like in marriage, when people get divorced, why should my spouse get 50%? Even if, let's say, only one of you worked and the other person didn't work. Well, the understanding is that without that person's support, without that person being beside you, you would not have been able to do what you did. You would not have been able to accomplish the things that you've accomplished. So instead of looking for who has the right answer, which can become its own thing, right? Like, well, I'm going to lose weight, but I need to research 20 diets, and then I'm going to see which one is the best. Instead of getting too caught up in who has the right answer, think about who believes in me, and who do I feel connected to. And I do believe that in the therapy world, unfortunately, there's been a great devaluation of connection. And again, the same way in the coaching world. But what would your life look like? I'm going to pose this question to you as we wind down. You know, what would your life look like if you didn't believe that you were someone who needed to be broken, that someone broken who needed to be fixed, rather? But what would your life be like if you believed that you were someone who was on the verge of accomplishing great things, but needed some support to be able to help you to keep going? I can't, you know, in my own life, I can't even, when I think about all the people who supported me, it's really amazing when times are tough and I'm really struggling with something, that I'll hear someone's voice, you know, or literally I'll hear someone's voice because I call someone, or I'll just hear someone's voice, even someone who's not there anymore, somebody who may have passed away, but I think about their encouraging words or their smile, and that keeps me going. So if you're looking for, if you're looking to make any of these changes in your life, if you're looking to make some big changes in your life, that's where I encourage you to look for that support. And I used to be one of these people who would just, I would think, you know, if only I could read the right book, if only I could, you know, find the right method, and what method is the best. And I really come to believe now that it is much more about, you know, it's much more, you know, what's the right method to learn how to walk, right? Is there a method to learn how to walk? There might be, but what's much more important than that, right? I mean, there is some mechanics to walking, and that's important. But what's much more important is those loving parents, that loving presence of people who say, you got this, you could do it. And no matter how many times you fall, I'm never going to doubt that you are going to walk. And that is exciting to me. That's what a great therapist can do. That's what a great coach can do. When I was working for an online therapy company, and we were doing text therapy primarily. And one of the things that I really was questioning was whether, you know, would texting be effective? Would this really work? You know, you can't really hear somebody's voice. And yet it does, because it does create that connection. And I know you said you can't get that in a book, but the texting is that live person on the other side. And even I hope, and it's certainly my hope doing this podcast, that it creates a connection with you, right? And that you know that I'm in your corner. But ultimately, at the end of the day, like I said, if you're thinking about reaching out and finding a therapist or a coach, and you think, what should I look for? Look for someone who delights in your progress, who looks for your progress, who looks for your change. And I encourage you to subscribe to the show. I would love to know if there's a topic that you'd like to see me cover. Please feel free to email me at dougforesta@gmail.com, dougforesta@gmail.com. Any topic related to change, to emotional healing, I'll be happy to address. And as always, keep creating. The world needs your gifts. Till next time, this is Doug Foresta at Creating Change.